Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Two Off the First for today. It is Thursday, September the 15th, 2022. I'm Ryan Ballengee. Great to have you with us. We are presented by our friends at French Lick Resort. Two stories for you today, as is the usual on the program. One related to a rumor mill that turned out to not produce the right rumor. And something about the future of the Ryder Cup, which I think is going to come increasingly in the focus starting really this week because of the DS Automobiles Italian Open. But first, let's start with the rumor mill that really caught fire yesterday. I mean, it's constant about the LIV Golf stuff. But I got a DM a couple days ago from a buddy of mine in the industry. And I mean, among many people I have a conversation with about LIV and golf and where this whole thing is headed. And that's a private conversation, but he alerted me to a tweet from one of the, you know, what you would consider a LIV bot account. And for those of you who aren't on Twitter and very online like I am, and good for you, you shouldn't be. But for those folks who are uninitiated about how the whole LIV propaganda campaign thing works, so there are a bunch of different accounts. Some of them are obvious bots. They're accounts that are made up. They started like 3 weeks ago. They have like no profile picture that's tangible. It's like a name and a billion numbers, and all they tweet about is LIV and how great it is and how Jay Monahan should resign and how LIV's better than everybody and all this, all these kind of talking points things, and they're kind of barely in English. It's not very good. And then you've got kind of this series of accounts of people who seem to have sprung up out of nowhere or maybe have been around a little while but have risen to prominence recently because they have quote-unquote sources in LIV that they're basically feeders that get information, whether that's legitimate or not, about LIV from some other source, which is probably either LIV directly or an agent shepherding a player to LIV or a player itself. But more likely, it's the first two. It's LIV providing the information as part of its campaign or an agent saying, you know, here's what my guys are doing or here's what we're doing or here's what we've heard is being done. But there are enough, I guess, potential sources out there that you could connect with them. But I don't know how you would connect with them, if that makes sense. Like that, there are several accounts where you're like, I don't even know how you would know any of these people related to LIV. Because most of the bios on these guys are usually, I'm just a golf fan who wants equal coverage. And then everything is about how great LIV is. So you can kind of see through those things. But what was an account, I'll say like UK golf lover or something like that, but something that sounds innocuous. And then you're like, wait, this has nothing to do with that. And so this account tweeted, I've basically heard that John Rahm spelled wrong, J-O-H-N instead of J-O-N, to the LIV Invitational is a go, and insinuated, pretty much expressly said that it was because, they didn't like the fact that Rory McIlroy kind of taken over as kind of de facto leader of the PGA Tour and didn't like the new schedule that he would be required to play as one of the top players in the PIP and elevated and all that stuff. And that he just had enough. He signed with LIV. And then all of a sudden you had a couple of other accounts that have been reporting this stuff, player defections, player moves. Oh, I've heard the same thing, or, you know, adding some random context to it that wasn't really accurate. And so, you know, all these chirpers are kind of getting together. Oh, I heard it first. And the guy who originally tweeted it. So I've never been wrong. Haven't been wrong yet. So you better believe it. It's going to happen. John Rahm is gone. And, you know, I had some skepticism about it, as did my friend of the industry. And at the same time, you could still, this is how crazy it's gotten. You could still connect the dots. You could still go, yeah, I could see how it could happen. You know, John Rahm's pretty close to the Mickelsons. Mickelson's obviously a part of it, has been a big recruiter for it. There's the Arizona State connection. There's part of that. There's the Spanier connection. There's part of that. And then, then logic takes over and you go, what? But why would John Rahm have said everything that he said last week at Wentworth about certain LIV players that shouldn't be there? And even the stalwarts of the European Tour maybe should be there, but, you know, I don't feel comfortable about it kind of thing. Why would he have said all of that if he knew he was going to go to LIV? And you start processing through and go, that just doesn't make any sense. It would have been one thing if he had done the Cam Smith thing or he had done the Brooks Koepka thing and just gotten indignant when asked about some rumor about him going. That didn't happen. We know that's a telltale sign, someone going to LIV. But that didn't happen around. And he was part of kind of united front publicly, at least ahead of the tournament, with Billy Horschel and Rory McIlroy. So it didn't make sense. And I thought to myself, how big of an ass would Rahm look like if he had said all of that and then took the money? That doesn't add up. And I know John Rahm is a very considerate, very smart human being. He thinks about this kind of stuff. He thinks about how he's perceived. He thinks about what he says when he responds to questions. He's very rational. So I just couldn't put two and two together. Well, then here comes John Rahm yesterday while I'm out in the golf course in the afternoon. And he says, well, you've now started a new streak. You've got a losing streak going. I'm not going to LIV. And thank you for the uplift in the player impact program, because a lot of people were talking about him yesterday because of the rumors that he would be going to LIV. And lovely, polite little slam of a guy who probably just heard a rumor from somebody. Again, one of those quote-unquote sources, one of the ones that we categorized earlier, and took it and ran with it and thought, this has to be true. They're not journalists. They're not necessarily people who work in a world where they have to have constant scrutiny of their information. And I'm not saying every journalist is good at scrutinizing information, by the way. There are plenty that are bad at it and don't really know how to appreciate what sources are and aren't telling them, or how to develop them, or how to figure out what's reliable and all that. So, but it's hard to learn that. You have to, especially for someone who's obviously being fed information by somebody and probably got some of it legitimately and some of it accurately. But at a certain point, you got to kind of take the certain bits of information that you get and go, how is this possible? How is this possible? And for Rahm, it just didn't seem plausible. Again, possible, plausible, you know, take your word. But it just didn't make sense at the end of the day. Possible, sure. But would it really add up? No, it wouldn't add up. And because it doesn't add up, you have to, you either reject it out of hand or you just don't talk about it until you're surprised. And if it does happen, okay, well, you kind of eat it a little bit. You might have known, you might have been tipped off and you just weren't willing to go with it. I've had that happen to me plenty of times in my career. Over the years of running either Golf News Net or working with Golf Channel or Yahoo Sports or even my blog with SB Nation. I mean, just take your pick. And you get information, you go, I don't know if this is true or not. You try to verify it. You get to a point where you're like, I still don't feel confident running with this. Even if two people told me it, but something just seems off about it. And I've had other times where I've had a source that I knew it dead to rights, told me something, and I went straight to who I needed to get to for an official comment because they knew and I knew I had the information. So you go through that as kind of a process of learning. I mean, you're taught about that somewhat professionally, but you're also in a sport like golf where you got to maintain relationships. you have to understand that if you put something out there that's shared with you in confidence, you might lose that relationship. Sometimes you're being fed information from certain people as a plant, like it's a transaction thing. Like, I'm going to give you information, you're going to help me by spreading it, kind of thing. That happens all the time. That's not just a golf thing. I mean, that's just life. So you have to figure that out too. Sometimes, do you want to put information out there that, yes, is accurate, true, it might be newsworthy, but just for the sake of helping someone else and whatever they're trying to clean up or augment or what have you? It's difficult. It's really hard to figure out. And so I'm not trying to rationalize for these LiveBot guys, but when you put something out like that, you better have it right. You better have it nailed down and crushed, because you're telling me one of the best players currently in the world and a U.S. Open champion is going to live golf. If you tell me that, that better be right, or you lose all of your credibility immediately and it's over. And that's what that guy experienced yesterday. Now, if he ever says anything again, even if it's right about a player going to live, it's going to be met with scrutiny. Hey, remember that time you said John Rahm was going to live? And that will be forever the response for that person. They might as well just delete their Twitter account. Just, again, unfortunate. You can have your points of view about Liv, but if you're going to try to be an information source, you can't get it wrong at the first time of asking. So, I thought that was really interesting. It's kind of an indication of where we are in this cycle, that when we kind of knew the players that were going to be going to Liv. I mean, it wasn't all crystal clear. I didn't expect Charles Howell III to go. I didn't think about Cameron Tringali going until the last minute when I heard from several people that he was going to go. Harold Varner III thought he wasn't going to go. Then he does, but then it makes sense. So you've kind of gone through all of the people that are likely to go. I mean, not all of them. There's still some out there that could leave, and they're going to maybe be one by one individual basis, and they're going to have to negotiate with Liv for an even bigger contract to leave. It's probably what's going to be. I mean, Hideki maybe goes for $500 million instead of the rumored $350 million or something. I don't know. But I think we're at the point now where we've pretty much established who's going to be on which tour for the foreseeable future. And so whatever trickle happens next, it might be very much a rumor-based thing instead of reporting-based thing for a lot of these Liv-connected people. And again, that brings into focus who you should trust. And on at least the European side of this, it's James Corrigan. On the American side of this, I think it's Bob Herrig, who's been willing to kind of be pretty neutral about things. And those are the sources you're going to have. And if anyone else says anything, I wouldn't trust it until you hear from either of those two gentlemen. They're the best at it. They've got their sources worked. They've staked out a claim on this beat. If you want to learn about the minutiae of Liv, talk to Alan Shipnick. Might not totally process it the best, but he gets the information. He understands what it means in that moment and will deliver it for you. Those are the three people to trust. So if you're following I Love Golf 1234567 on Twitter, stop it. They don't have information. Please don't do that. But if you're listening to me, you probably already know that. So interesting story. Just kind of fun to see, I guess. Fun / disconcerting to see what kind of happens in this whole environment where you're trying to figure out who's going to make the next move and why, and the rationalization that happens when you see something that could happen. And it's a very confusing time. Let's just leave it at that. We'll kind of spin that forward a little bit because we've got the DS Automobiles Italian Open this week. That's the DP World Tour stop. So you follow Wentworth, their flagship event, which was reduced to 54 holes because of Queen Elizabeth's passing. And they move to Rome and to Marco Simone Golf Club. Well, Marco Simone is going to host the Ryder Cup next year. And this is the first time that the club is hosting the Italian Open. And they're doing that because the Europeans do this. They try to get players to compete in an actual golf tournament at their host sites. So that way, these guys can get together. They can be either be paired together or practice together or strategize together, talk together. I mean, pretty much the whole front of this event is to get ready for the Ryder Cup, not only in terms for the players, but also for the Rome area, which is going to be a very curious Ryder Cup host, because I don't think there's a whole lot of drive in Italy for golf, but the Italian Open does tend to have an interesting draw to it. It usually gets some pretty decent players. They had, for a couple of years, had a really huge purse when you got the Italian government behind it. Now you've got the Ryder Cup coming. So these players are getting a first look at this golf course, and then they're going to try and talk through how they want to set it up with Luke Donald, who is now the European captain, and start thinking about this. The process really started with Wentworth in terms of earning points, but now you're in the process of playing this new to them golf course and trying to figure out what it's going to be like to play in a Ryder Cup environment, which obviously is different than 72-hole stroke play. You're playing either four balls or foursomes, and you got to think your way through that over the course of the week. So there's that facet of this entire thing. And obviously that's all known going into it. So Rory McIlroy, who's the highest ranked player, obviously, in the field, and he's there along with Matt Fitzpatrick and Tyrrell Hatton and Victor Hovland. So you got, you know, four guys almost certainly are going to be on the European Ryder Cup team. And they're there trying to figure this place out. And as we're talking, Rory McIlroy has the clubhouse lead in the morning wave, tied with two other guys already in the clubhouse. And he's obviously kind of feeling pretty good about the golf course. And before the tournament, he was kind of asked about the entire situation of the Ryder Cup team, not necessarily in the context of LIV, although I guess you could interpret it that way, but just tried to talk about where the European Ryder Cup team is, especially coming off of a 19-9 loss at Whistling Straits last time around. And I think McIlroy put it pretty well, and I think that's his assessment is similar to what I would say, and probably a lot of other people would say, about where the European Ryder Cup team was, even before the LIV stuff happened. And that is that it was time for a change. And you could see it in the faces of the guys that have been a rock for the European Ryder Cup side for so long. For Ian Poulter, who got super emotional. For Lee Westwood, who got super emotional. Sergio Garcia, to a degree, got super emotional. You've got these players who have been a part of this team for 20, 25 years, and they're up there in age now. They were either a part of the team in their early 20s and stuck with it for the most of their career, if not all of it. I mean, Westwood kind of had his down phase, but then obviously came back, and after a little bit of time in the desert, became a key European figure for a decade and a half. But those guys are now in their 40s, late 40s, early 50s, and all of a sudden, those players are not relevant to the Ryder Cup anymore. Because what's on the other side with the Americans is a bunch of relatively young, if not actually young, bombers who hit the crap out of the ball, who are playing golf in a modern style, and are just going to maul you if you're a short knocker who hits a 275 and has to hit 5 and 6 irons into every green. And so McIlroy said Wednesday, I think we're kind of in a rebuild. And he used the word rebuild with the European team. And I think he's absolutely right. They've got to figure out the next generation of the Ryder Cup. And you've got, as I mentioned, those guys pretty well defined, at least so far. You mean you've got McIlroy, you've got Hovland, you've got Rahm, you've got Fitzpatrick. You could say Hatton. I think you could say Fleetwood. He's starting to kind of figure it out again. But you've got to figure out the future. And what does that look like? And I think what the end result is going to be come 2023, and by the time Luke Donald finishes setting up this team, which, by the way, I mean, he has a ton of captain's picks, but he's going to set up a team that's going to be younger, substantially younger, and substantially inexperienced, particularly compared to the Americans. And the Americans are going to lose some bodies too, right? I don't imagine a situation where LIV players are going to be eligible to compete in the Ryder Cup. They're just, first of all, they're not going to earn points. They can't earn points. It's all done through the PGA Tour. So unless there's somehow a captain's pick, I suppose, which is possible, but unlikely. So you're looking at a situation where you're going to lose Brooks Koepka. You're going to lose Dustin Johnson. Well, I mean, okay, that's fine. but I don't know that you're necessarily, you know, losing everything there in the farm, especially with Dustin Johnson getting older. I mean, he's closer to me in age than Scottie Scheffler, and I'm almost 40. I mean, I think he's, what, 38 now? And Koepka's getting up there in his mid-30s, obviously has some injury problems he's been dealing with, and probably playing part-time golf helps that to a degree. But and then you don't have Tiger Woods really part of it anymore. I mean, that is long gone. Obviously, Phil Mickelson is done, but he wasn't really part of it anyhow. So that transition had kind of already happened on the American side. So now it's the turn for the Europeans to make their transition, and they're going to have to figure out who their stalwarts are going to be. And I don't know that they have the clear answers about that right now, but I think that's kind of exciting. I think that's what's going to make this move forward, is the Americans had to figure out their next generation. Well, they got them now. Now the Europeans got to figure out their next generation, and can they figure it out in effectively 12 months' time from now? If they can do that, then they've got a chance. If they can't, they're going to get walloped on home soil, and it's going to be the first time since 1993 that the Americans have won abroad, which would be a huge accomplishment for them, and also a watermark in the series. So there's a lot to think about, a lot to grow from here in the next couple of Ryder Cups. Things are going to change. The Ryder Cup is changing, and I think that's a good thing, because that kind of lines up pretty nicely with LIV, but the Ryder Cup is changing. The next generation of this event is coming, and hopefully it's just as exciting as the last generation has been, even as painful as it may have been for American fans who are used to just crushing the Europeans in the second generation of the Ryder Cup. So now we're getting into, depending on how you want to argue it, third or fourth generation of the Ryder Cup, and hopefully for a new generation of fans, that means some really compelling changes, some compelling players and great matchups. But I think McIlroy is right. He has set the tone properly. The Ryder Cup needs a little bit of a rebuild on the European side, and Luke Donald may be the guy to help usher that in to a degree. That's going to do it for us on today's show. Thank you so much for listening. If you listen to us through a service that gives you a chance to give us a review, please give us a 5-star review. Helps out, helps us reach more people. You can follow me on social media. I'm on Twitter for the most part. The handle is Ryan Ballinger. You can follow Golf News Net on your favorite social media service at the handle Golf News Net. We'll see you tomorrow.